Thank you, Claire and Mark and everyone else on the committee for asking me to come talk a bit about lentils. Yes, I'm a dry bean breeder, but I also work on lentils because in Saskatchewan, this takes way bigger precedence than beans. So this is a presentation that I'm giving on behalf of myself and Bert Vandenberg, who's the who is the lentil breeder. I'm not the breeder. I just do the genomics for his program. All right, so this is a different spin on some of the data that you've already seen, and I'm going to give credit to Bert for the second part of this slide. All right, so these are the top crops in the world, and the growth since 1970 up till recently. This is the latest FAO stats we could get. And you see there's been growth in some, tremendous growth in some crops, not much growth in other crops. Something's going on with sorghum or not going on with sorghum. But if you notice what's not on that list, but more at the point, what is on the list, it's all carbs, all fat, a bit of beer. Although there's no growth in beer, but I think we can explain that by bean beer, lentil beer, and this morning somebody emailed me a link to kale ale, which really, I don't know, I think we should go back to barley. Okay, so, and then of course there's the French fries and ketchup, and we seem to be consuming an awful lot more rum, perhaps, with the French fries. So, what's missing, obviously, our favorite crops, the protein crops, which are probably also missing from everybody's diet, especially in North America. They're doing a little bit better job in India, but apparently they're going down the wrong path as well. So this is the same look where we're comparing. This is tons, production. We're just looking at production, okay? Production 40 plus years ago and more recently, and you can see there's some things aren't doing very well. Beans is doing all right, but really the biggies are cowpea and lentil. And I asked the cowpea people yesterday, what's going on with cowpea? And the best they could come up with is increased acreage in West Africa. And the lentil situation is a similar story, where it's increased acres in mostly Canada, I mean mostly Saskatchewan, and a little bit in Australia as well. And so it's a different story where we're actually adding to the landscape there instead of swapping it out for other crops. So that's kind of promising. So big lentil producing regions of the world are India, where they're consuming it all, and the Middle East, Mediterranean region, where it all originates from. And then there's this smack in the middle of the continent here is a big area of production and pretty much zero consumption. And we export it all over here to add to the production that they're, or the default in production, because they're moving out of pulses and into cereals. Okay. I think part of the reason, though, on the whole, that we're getting increased production and consumption in lentil globally is the fact that it cooks much more quickly than most of the other pulses. And so there's, I know in North America the trend is upwards because it's easy to cook lentils, especially with rice, and get that into your diet, or hide it, as I do, in brownies and other good foods like that. The biggest production increase has been in Canada, and last, this is 2014 off the FAO data. Lentils are lentils on FAO data, as far as I know. This past year, if you also include, in Canada, which is primarily Saskatchewan, a little bit into Alberta, and then if you go over the little wall that we're building here, there's some more acres that give us well over 6 million acres of lentil that were produced this year. And why is that? Because there is demand for them. In fact, the two most profitable grain crops in Western Canada this year were two protein crops, hemp and lentils. And I don't know if it's a coincidence, but Bert Vandenberg breeds both. Okay, so those of you who know Bert are not surprised. So lentil, if you're not familiar with the wide variety, we don't have as many fun seed coats as there are in dry beans, but there are different seed coat colors, different cotyledon colors, different sizes, shapes, and so on that dictate the market classes that we actually sell. And in Saskatchewan, I think at last count, Bert had about 14 different market classes on the go. Predominantly, it's the reds and the large greens, but there's also a few others thrown in just for fun. It's an ancient crop that a lot of the reason in Saskatchewan that there's been this huge increase is because of the recognition of what people recognized 10,000 years ago is that if you grow a legume with a cereal, everything goes better. You get a better diet, and you also have better soil health, break that cereal snow rotation that we used to have, and that's primarily what happened in Saskatchewan was we moved out of summer fallow and into, which means no crop, and into 1 year of a pulse, and it's made a huge difference to not only the farmer's bottom line from the cash they get from the pulse crop, but also from the protein, increased protein and increased yield they're seeing in their cereals that follow. All right. As the person who does the genomics, this is the scary part about lentil is it has a very large genome, same size as pea, and it's still a diploid. It doesn't have any more genes than tiny little metacago or chickpea does. So lots of fun, and I'll show you a bit of that in a second. There's six wild species as well, five of which are very easily accessible with just a little bit of tissue culture, and so we've been exploring that, and I'll give you a couple of pictures of that later on. All right, so some of the work we've been doing most recently, this has taken up a lot of my time, was the genome sequence that we've been heading up. It started out when we talked to the Saskatchewan pulse growers and convinced them that if they funded it, then we could probably leverage money out of other countries, and it worked. So they provided the seed money, a big whack of money, and that was greatly appreciated to get us going on sequencing one of Bert's varieties, CDC Redberry. The whole goal is to develop a full representation of the gene space. We are under no illusion that we will ever get the whole genome because it's full of these repeats that make it very difficult. Basically, the point then is to get at the gene space, look at gene prediction, annotation, and then we're sharing all this data globally because there's too few people who work on lentil globally, so there's no point in hiding stuff. And so, although technically it's hidden behind an end user license agreement right now, if I ever get the paper written and out, then we'll share it widely through our web portal. But if you want to see it now, you can just ask. Okay, so just some quick summary of what we've got in terms of the lentil that will be released. We basically have almost 3/4 of the 4 gigs assembled. 1.8 gig are actually accounted for on the 7 pseudomolecules, which are the 7 chromosomes. A large portion, in addition to that, we know which chromosome they're on, we just don't know where in the chromosome. And that was based on some flow sorting data that we got out of the Czech Republic. We found 39 high-confidence gene models, of which 285 of them are well-supported by NBSLRRs, and that's the inner circle here. So there's very few resistance genes on chromosome 1. There's quite a few on chromosome 3. And it's kind of lining up more or less where you would expect based on syntony with metacago as Juan was alluding to in the beans as well. All right, but the other thing is there's this insane number of repeats, and that's represented. So this is the second line here is the gene space, and then we have the repeats are in this circle, and then I split out the repeats into type 1 and type 2 transposons. And if you look at these repeats of the genome that we've managed to assemble, over 25% of it is actually repeats, or known repeats, and then I'm guessing most of the additional material that isn't in the genome, so that 1.25 gig is actually more repeats. And then these are primarily LTR retrotransposons, which are primarily copia and gypsy, and they're all over the place, including in the middle of genes, just like the whole genome's polluted with these repeats, which is really quite interesting. And one of these days, I'm going to figure out what it's all about. All right, shared tintinny with Metacago, kind of like the bean story. All the legumes share a considerable amount of shared tintinny, and so you'll see more or less a one-to-one with just little twiddles here and there within chromosomes, and then a couple of major translocations that define the species. And the main, well, there's the 4-8 translocation that's well known within the Metacago genome. And then we have a major 1-5 translocation as well. And that's the rest is all just sort of minor rearrangements across the genome. So, as I said, the genome is available right now to do blasting against, and also just looking at it through a JBrowse, which is a graphical viewer of the genome. It's behind an end-user licensing agreement right now, but if you want access, that's fine. Okay, that's interesting enough, but the more interesting side of it, especially as a breeder, is how can we apply all that information, all the tools that we've generated in the process of developing the genome assembly, how can we apply that to the field? And for those of you who are breeders in the room, this is our favorite equation, right? And so the idea, genetic gain is a function. Primarily, we're going to worry about heritability, and this comes from the genetic variability, right? So by applying genomics, I want to attack these two portions of the genetic gain equation in order to up our gain. And hopefully then meet Dr. Singh's challenge of increasing yield and more production. So just a couple of examples of what we're doing. Even based on early versions of the genome, we were able to pull out genes of interest, mostly based on knowledge of genes in other systems. So the 0-tannin gene, no big surprise, is the same gene as the A gene in peas. So that's how we pulled this one out. Green cotyledon, same story. It's the stagreen gene, and then we'd known about the herbicide, so the imidazolinone tolerance gene we already knew about, but we've developed actually a SNP marker, which instead of spending $40 a plot times 2 years worth of trials in order to fix, we can do a 40-cent CASP assay, and away we go. So those are just some of the, these are now being used routinely in the breeding program, and where we're heading research-wise is into targeting genes for domestication and adaptation. So we recently managed to leverage more Saskatchewan Pulse Grower funding and with Genome Canada funding, and partnered with some colleagues around the world to start looking at adaptation in lentils. So it started first by looking at this is a result of diversity data from 450 different lentil lines that Doug Cook's group ran for us down in Davis and through GBS, and then we looked at it, and here's what you get. For the upshot of this graph is basically these are South Asian lines, and they're represented by dark blue. These are Canadian lines, represented by light blue, and these are basically what comes out of the Mediterranean region and through the Middle East into Western Asia. And you'll see there's mixes in here of the different colors, but as you get out to these edges, there's no mixing. And what that is that these guys are not crossing with Canadian material, and Canadians aren't crossing with South Asian material. This is bridging. And basically what's happening then is you have there's a big bottleneck in here on a lack of genetic diversity, and we have the same problem out at this end. And there's logic for this. It's not that we don't like people in the other regions and vice versa. It's that when you take a South Asian line and you grow it under the 16-hour days that we're used to, they flower in 30 days and then they're done in another, say, 20 days. Whereas the Canadian material takes a couple of extra weeks to flower, and it's critical, that couple of extra weeks. It means that you actually take advantage of the whole growing season, and so the yields are much higher. The problem is if you then take the Canadian material and take that down to the short days in South Asia, and they start flowering just as the rain shuts off and the heat gets turned on, and they fry up before they can actually produce any crop. So there's very good reasons why we aren't crossing with each other's material. And where this is to explain that graph, you can look at, this is the area where lentils originate, right? It's exactly where you don't want to be traveling these days. And people did travel out of that area thousands of years ago, and out they took the material that became the South Asian population went this way. The stuff that's around the Mediterranean went around the Mediterranean. Clearly, these are following trade routes. Material moved up into Europe. And then the bulk of the Canadian germplasm actually derives from a single line that comes out of Russia. All right, and the differences between the growing regions are we grow summer, so a plant in April, take it off in August or May to September, somewhere in there. In the Mediterranean region, it's a winter crop, so plant it around now and harvest it in May. And in South Asia, it's a much quicker winter crop because, of course, by March, it's starting to get quite warm. And so that pretty much defines the three different eco-physiological regions that the lentils are grown in. So what we've done is we've taken that diversity panel and grown them in three regions, temperate regions in North America. We have just sent seed over to the Mediterranean region and down into South Asia, where we will be, hopefully they'll be planting them in the next few days. Okay, you'll notice that we don't have any over here because I am having a hard time getting my permission from the university for my grad students to go to this area of the world. I'm not even going to ask them to go there. Okay. Quickly, here's just some results from this past summer. In Saskatchewan, you can see this is the sun, and at the peak in June. This is basically the growing season, and here's the diversity. So 324 lines, and this is the diversity in time to emerge. And you'll notice this is the red line here is temperature. So there was a big dip right here, which caused emergence to be delayed at this location. This is flowering. First sign of a swollen pod and then maturity. And so you can see there's this diversity across there. And if you go in and you pull it apart and look at the temperate versus South Asian material, and this is just days to flower. The guys who were generating this data for me were too busy sending out the seed packets to do any more than this for me. These are your temperate lines. This is your South Asian lines, and right about here is the summer solstice. So you can see the temperate lines are waiting until after the sun starting to get, or the day length starting to get shorter, whereas these are experiencing basically so much light that they're hurrying up to try and grow. So what we're trying to do is get at the genes that are underlying this. And hopefully if we can tag those, then we can pre-sort our material. We could cross a South Asian by Canadian and pre-sort our either multi-parent F1s or F2s even into two piles. One that there's no hope for them in Canada, let's ship them off to South Asia and we'll only grow the other set. And vice versa, this could also happen. So hopefully we'll be able to, I mean that's probably a gross oversimplification, but we'll see. Okay, the other area that we're working on is looking at wild relatives as a source of genes. And this has been an ongoing project in Bert's program for well over 15 years now. And it's primarily aimed at disease resistance originally, but we're finding all sorts of other fun genetic variability that's in the wild parents. And it includes things like Orobanchi resistance, which thankfully is not an issue in the temperate regions, but it certainly is a big issue in the Mediterranean regions. There's some interesting differences in nitrogen fixation, nodulation, rooting, that sort of thing. Some carbohydrate profiles that are different. Seed sizes are all over the place, especially if you cross, you get some interesting segregation. Different polyphenolics. We're finding different trill responses to light, which we're hoping we can tie in with increased competition with weeds, and so on and so forth. This is just an example, actually, of a line that really stood out in Bert's program a few years ago, and when he went back and looked to see what its origin, what the parents were, it turns out that not the not the direct parents, but up in the grandparents, there was actually a wild lentil. And you can see there's a huge, obviously, gain in there, and I like to argue that it probably did come from that wild parent. The problem with wilds, though, is they're a pain in the neck to work with, and we've had to develop a whole new agronomy system, including spending a lot of time bagging them because they do shoot their seeds everywhere. You'll find them on the other side of the growth rooms, growing in pots really happily. So we bag them, and they're growing in pots because they also tend to be prostrate, which then means they get stomped on or by critters that are or people walking through the area. So, so we've developed this insane system of growing them, and so I want to look at domestication traits so that we can quickly get rid of that shattering problem and so on. Here's just a few photos from trips over to Turkey when it was safe to travel in Turkey and Spain. About 18 months ago we were over there looking at, here's some of the Orobanchi trials we have and we are seeing. These are interspecifics. Well, that's actually a check. That's an Estin check. But in between the Estins you can see these lines here. Those are interspecifics with Lenzervoides, which is out quite distantly related actually. So we're characterizing these for everything from disease resistance or Orobanchi resistance, and also looking at the polyphenolics and other traits as we go through. All right, the future. This increased demand, and I think there is going to continue to be an increased demand for crops, pulses, especially easy to cook ones like lentil. No offense to the beans, but we need to make the beans cook faster, kind of like lentils. And so there is this increasing demand. The issue, though, is that means that we're going to be putting material onto increasingly marginal acres. And we saw a lot of that this year. When we went up to that 5.6 million acres, a lot of those extra acres were either areas that shouldn't have been put into lentil production, or was... The area was okay, but it was new farmers who'd never grown lentils before. And as a result, there's some interesting yields out there ranging from 0 to 70 bushels per acre. So it's all over the map, right? And then it snowed early on us, and then it got to be 20 degrees this weekend. So, the global climate change is happening, and it's causing a lot of problems for our producers. And so we need to get a tougher plant that can be grown on increasingly marginal land, and that's just for Canada, never mind the rest of the world, right? So I can see we'll be looking at increasing variability through crosses with the unadapted material and the wild material, making better use of the genetic variability that actually is there, and not having to go to extreme measures in order to get it. And then the other area is more accurate phenotyping and genotyping that we need to marry together in order to make selection much more easy. And with that, I'd like to point out that we get a lot of our money from the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers, the Saskatchewan government. And then in the sequencing, there were a lot of partners around the world. So, thank you. You get one question.
Have you done much breeding for root rot resistance or white mold?
Not white mold, but there's some root rot work being started. It's been wet the last 5 years in Saskatchewan, so yeah. Not as wet as North Dakota, but wetter, yeah.